Hi, Michaela Lafrac here. The podcast you are about to listen to has been edited for clarity and brevity. Recently, Vermont Public held a community picnic in St. Albans, Taylor Park, on a beautiful sunny Thursday afternoon. It was a chance for the community to come together, eat some good food, and listen to music. Folks also had the chance to chat with Vermont Public reporters and producers, myself included, about their community and the issues that matter most to them in the 2024 elections. Then we convened a panel discussion about the economic challenges and opportunities in Franklin County. We're going to share that conversation with you today. The panel was moderated by Vermont Public's Mitch Wertlieb, the host of the Daily Frequency podcast and the weekly TV show Vermont This Week. The panelists were Elizabeth Nance, who until recently was the Economic Development Coordinator for the Franklin County Industrial Development Corporation. She was also Swanton's first Economic Development Coordinator. Next up was Representative Mike McCarthy, a Democrat representing Franklin County. He's a former small business owner and has served as the chair of the St. Albans Downtown Board and the St. Albans City Council. Kelly Vienz is the recreation director for the St. Albans Recreation Department. Heather Darby is a University of Vermont professor of agronomy and soils. She works closely with farmers throughout Franklin County, and she's also a farmer herself. And Jason Gagne is the owner and operator of Gagne Maple, a 30,000-tap maple farm in Highgate. He's also the vice president of the Vermont Maple Sugar Makers Association. The segment is pre-recorded, so we won't be taking any more calls or emails. And with that, I'll turn it over to Mitch.
We're going to have a fun discussion about what the economy looks like in Franklin County, your community. We want to hear from you. We're going to talk to these wonderful people who've taken their time today to come out and tell us about this place. So I want to start out by asking, and this is sort of a general question I'm going to throw out to everybody on the panel, and we'll start maybe from right to left here. If you had to describe Franklin County to a friend who does not live here, what would you say? How would you do it? Elizabeth, let's start with you.
Well, as somebody who just moved back to Franklin County a month ago, it is a place, a region that has a lot to offer. It is a place that takes care of itself. There's a lot of community. There's a lot of diversity in what you can do, where you can work. We got mountains in Franklin County. Look, we got a lake. We've got more than one lake. There's just a lot to offer, and it's a great place to be.
Thank you for that. Mike McCarthy, how would you describe Franklin County to someone?
Franklin County is a beautiful place, and it's kind of a microcosm of Vermont. It's got a little city like we've got here in St. Albans, that's surrounded by farms and the lake. And so it's got rural, it's got our downtown, it has everything that a lot of Vermont has. And it's got an incredible sense of community and neighbors supporting neighbors. Franklin County is just an amazing place.
Okay. Kelly, what do you think?
I would agree with the mountains, the lake. You get so much different geography in a very small place, but most important, I think, to me are the people here. It's so family friendly. It is, so many of the people I talk to that move here, it's because it's a great place for families. So, and so many great volunteers that make a lot of fun things happen here.
Thank you for that. Heather Darby, you're describing Franklin County to someone who's never been here before. What do you say?
Awesome. Rich agricultural community, close-knit communities. People that live here that just always are there to help each other out. And I don't call it home personally, but I always feel at home whenever I'm around here.
That's really nice. Jason Gagne, your family's been around here for a long time. How would you describe Franklin County?
I come from Highgate, and it's a nice, quiet community. Everybody knows everyone in Highgate.
Elizabeth Nance, you've been working on economic development for quite some time. What does it mean to promote or facilitate economic development here in Franklin County?
There are so many things that encompass economic development. The quality of life, childcare, healthcare, transportation, housing, all of those things that you need to be secure in. So it starts, what do businesses, organizations need? What are they looking for? What are the challenges? What are the opportunities? Which seems pretty basic, but everybody's different. What may work for one person or business or organization doesn't work for the next. Where's the funding? Where's the building? Where's the housing? So it's trying to put all of those pieces together in a way that makes sense.
See, that's interesting. And I want to follow up with you, Kelly, because when we're talking about economic development, it's not always just jobs, right? I mean, you work in recreation, and there are other things that let's say families looking to relocate are looking for in where they want to go. What can you tell us about what Franklin County offers that's not necessarily directly related to jobs?
Right. We know that families find this a beautiful place to live, but what can I do here? When they're deciding what part of Vermont am I going to move to, they want to know what's available, what can my family do, what's here. So we've mentioned, the mountains, the lake, the rail trail. I think we're one of the very few communities, or maybe the only one in Vermont, that has a little ski hill and a sledding hill walkable on the sidewalk. You can walk up Congress Street and go skiing, or you can go sledding. We've got 95 acres of trails at Hardack for mountain biking, cross-country skiing, just walking, and a dog park up at Hardack, and a beautiful year-round pool. So all those features draw people here. And, a lot of time when people are here at an event, they'll say, is it always like this? And it's like, yeah, this place is awesome. It's an awesome place to live. We've got so many, so many great things to do. And, we hear from so many people who have moved here because they came to an event, or, they come here for dinner, or, they just fall in love with the place.
I knew about the pool. I didn't know about the little ski hill. That's quite amazing.
Yeah, it's one of the last rope tows in Vermont.
Oh, my gosh, that's so cool. Heather, what do you hear from dairy farmers that you work with here? I mean, what are they saying about their economic opportunities and maybe some of the biggest challenges they're struggling with as well?
Yeah, well, I think if somebody's lived in Franklin County for a long time, they know that the dairy industry has been and continues to be extremely important to the county, both economically. It's an economic driver here, provides a lot of jobs for individuals. It creates much of the landscape that people really value in rural communities, throughout Vermont, not just Franklin County. But it's changed. And it's changed over the 20 years that I've worked in Franklin County quite substantially. And the change has really been around the loss of farms, which is a national problem. I think it's important to note that every farm in the state of Vermont is owned by a family. What is really different, though, I think that people don't always understand is that, I think about the Gagnés as an example. They are from a large family, just like mine, and there's 12 brothers and sisters. And, back in the old days, each one of those individuals would split off and have their own little farm, maybe 50, maybe 30 cows. But today, those siblings stay together, and they farm together. So the farms are bigger that are owned by families, but they're all still owned by families, many of the names that people still recognize in this county, except there's four brothers and a sister running the operation, and they've taken those small farms and brought them together to help through the economic downturns that people face in agriculture. So I would say that is different.
The loss of these family farms, what do you think is the major driver behind that?
Prices. And, that's a national and really even a global issue when people aren't paid for, any of us aren't paid what our product or, the value of what we bring to the table, we're not paid for the value of that, then it makes it hard to stay in business. And so that's the primary driver of what has caused, especially many of our I would say medium-sized farms to go out of business is that, you know, they can't, let's say, they can't send someone off the farm to maybe get a job somewhere else in Franklin County and contribute a second income, right? And so it just, the economics aren't there. And that's been the primary reason for loss.
Jason Gagne, you and I were talking before this all started, and, you know, you were saying maple is still, it's still a marker of Vermont. It is still very much identified with this state. People love maple syrup here, and they think about Vermont when they think about maple, certainly outside the state. But I'm wondering, since you've been in this business and your family's been in this business for so long, are things changing just with the climate? We know climate change is affecting so many things. Has it affected your industry?
Climate and maple are very hard to intertwine because we make a crop. 75% of our crop is made in 10 days. 10 days. As it does get warmer, the region for maple and growing maple trees starts moving further north. So maybe in 150 years, maybe Vermont isn't in that belt anymore of where maples will grow. But they're just trying to extrapolate those numbers. So climate is a hard thing as a farmer to understand and see a direct correlation.
I think it's hard for all of us to understand, and it's we're in the middle of it, and we're still trying to figure it all out. How, though, generally would you say the maple industry is doing in Vermont? If you had to give it a grade, like your syrup, let's say.
I would say we're getting an A for a grade. We've been growing and growing. The market is there for maple syrup. The demand, the market wants more maple syrup. The price doesn't always reflect what the market is driving because of our big brother to the north. They do dictate price. So Vermont is still seen as a premium on the market. Vermont maple syrup will always sell before other states and provinces maple syrup. So, but it doesn't fetch the same premium it used to fetch. But it will always sell before. A lot of maple farmers have gone organic. There's been a premium paid for organic. There wasn't a hard conversion. A lot of just management strategies in converting from conventional to organic. So a lot of my fellow sugar makers will say they don't like the paperwork side of it, but
yeah, they didn't get into maple sugaring for the paperwork. Definitely not.
So, but climate will continue to play every year. We all sit around at the end of the year and we theorize why it was good sometimes, bad, why the sugar was lower one year than higher another year. It's a very hard science to completely hammer down.
I think what we're seeing with farmers too now is there's a diversification because of need. They are doing value-added agriculture. You may raise goats, but make goat cheese. So there's a farm in Highgate who is doing an apple orchard in addition to maple, and they have transitioned completely away from dairy, not the Gagnés. So we are seeing that because there is that need because of market forces, that diversification.
Representative Mike McCarthy, you know, here we are in downtown St. Albans. You know this area so well. You had a small business here, started Cosmic Bakery in 2008, I believe. Love the name, by the way. And I'm sure that the downtown now looks a lot different than it did maybe 10 years ago. And I know a lot of this has to do with something called TIF, or Tax Increment Financing District. I probably just put the entire crowd to sleep with that, saying that. But TIF is a big deal. Tell us why that's maybe a sexier term than I'm giving the credit for here.
Yeah, so thanks, Mitch. And Cosmic comes from my grandparents' bakery, which was down in lower Delaware for a long time. And we kind of recreated that for a few years here. Just as the downtown was starting to focus on this revitalization that you're really seeing the fruits of if you look out from Taylor Park and see how busy everything is now. But back in 2008, about half of the storefronts were empty downtown. And there were a number of blighted properties that now have really active, beautiful buildings and businesses going on. And the way that we've been able to catalyze that is with tax increment financing. So it was a really key funding tool. Elizabeth talked about how funding is one of those things in the mix with community economic development. What tax increment financing allows you to do is essentially borrow money against the future building that's going to happen there and that future grand list value. So you're saying, okay, the community is going to take a little bit of a risk and is going to bet that if we make a public investment, there's going to be more private investment in businesses and buildings, and that that new tax increment, the new value, will be enough to pay back the debt payments. And lo and behold, we've been able to see over $70 million of private investment on just in the teens of millions of dollars in public investment here. And so it's really paid off, but it's been because the community again and again has allowed us to build on early success. So there was one project and then another and then another. And as the community got more confident that this financing mechanism and the other investments that the local and state monies were making to do everything that we're doing here, also buoyed by an initial federal investment, it was pulling all that together, having the community really respond to it, having businesses come and locate here because of that investment, and having the expertise of people at City Hall over the last few years, that's really been incredible. So we've been blessed with kind of the perfect storm of community engagement, some really cool financing that's allowed us to do that without putting a burden on local property taxpayers. So by growing the pie, essentially, at the same time as we're growing the number of people who are paying for it, we're able to kind of get more service and more investment into our community without having any individual homeowner or taxpayer have to pay more in municipal property taxes with the TIF.
I mean, it's a great success story, but you have to have that buy-in from the community. And then I was going to say, and the buy-in from the private investment, but that's one and the same in a way, isn't it?
TIF works the best when you have people come together in a community with a shared vision that gives confidence to both the folks taking the public risk with the taxpayers saying, yeah, we're willing to take on this debt, and those private businesses who are saying, yeah, we'll do that project, and we're willing to, you know, come and invest in your community, and we see the possibility of the future. I mean, you think about the hotel, the new state office building, the expansion at Milan, the Ace Hardware store, all of these investments that have happened, and you know, new ones like the new rail dispatch center that's up at the north end of the city. All of those things have been facilitated by the TIF, but it's kind of like if you've got a really great lending program to buy a new house, it's not just the bank and the lender. It has to be the person selling you the house and the new family that wants to move into it. And there's all those other players. And so the TIF is a really key part of the funding mechanism, but it's the people that really made the difference. And this community really rallied together around a shared vision of having this downtown be revitalized. And it's really, really paid off. And everyone here is so proud of what we've been able to do in St. Albans. And I think a lot of our neighboring towns, when I'm in the legislature, they want to know, how did you do it? You know, people are jealous of what we've got here in Franklin County.
You know, one of the things we do talk about, though, and this is statewide, really nationwide, is affordability and things like housing. Can people afford, you know, we've seen home prices skyrocket, rents are going up. Elizabeth, talk about a little bit about how Franklin County has weathered that storm, if it has, and what can be done or what should be done, do you think, to improve affordability so people can afford to move a family here?
Well, we'll put taxes aside for the moment. That's a whole nother discussion. I think that, again, coming back to the pandemic, and I referenced that, it really showed where there is a lack of housing just by the organizations that were dealing with people facing homelessness or in homelessness. Childcare was the other issue, and transportation, and all of those are wrapped around. You have to have a house where you can get to work so you can afford to have the house, but you have to be able to get to the work that will pay for the house that you need to have. So you have to have the transportation. So all of, and then throw in childcare. All of those pieces are connected. I think that we have seen in the last year, maybe two, some short-term solutions. And we're seeing other communities. I know the Cathedral Square, a housing organization, was just approved for funding for housing in Highgate. But we're seeing housing coming online, FCIDC, Franklin County Industrial Development. We did a small housing project in Enosburg. It's 8 units with an additional 4 coming online, so it's not going to make a huge difference, but it's housing that's not there. So I think, and with my new job, I'm seeing the number of housing projects throughout the state that are coming online. We have aging Vermonters who want to age in place, but maybe they want to downsize, or maybe they want to stay in place, but they maybe want to have a accessory dwelling unit, so maybe a family member can come in case they might need assistance. So we're starting to see a real focus on that. And it's not cheap. Building houses isn't cheap. And some of it is realizing that single, 3, 4, 5 bedroom single family homes aren't what young people are necessarily looking for. And matching the zoning, matching the development to what will bring folks to the communities.
We also know that healthcare is a huge expense. This is true around the country. It's true here in Vermont. Kelly, I'm wondering if a case can be made that a community that has a lot of recreational opportunities, chances for people to get outdoors, exercise, and do things, can you make the case that, in a way, that can help drive down healthcare costs?
Well, certainly we know just, getting outdoors, whether you're out here in the park on a beautiful day, yeah. Mentally,
yes.
It's wonderful. Winters can be harsh, and it's nice to get outside in the spring. We know that families that have an ability to have their kids in a great place and have them outdoors, which is, kind of our business, is running camps, running activities. We know that those kids do better. They do better in school. They do better in life. They just do better. So, and on the other end of the age group, we're working with insurance companies to provide programming for age 60 and over, and whether it is we're doing an aquatic program that they can attend for free, we're doing a bird walk that they can attend for free, so they're out on the trail, just, socializing. We know that with older folks, they don't always get, they lose that connection sometimes. So being out and socializing, whether, it's at the pool or at a bird walk or, in any capacity is great. It's good for your mental and physical health.
Heather, I want to ask about if there are any tensions between where Franklin County is headed and what it used to be. Like, maybe there's less dairy now. I mean, are there things that people are saying to you, I wish Franklin County could be more like it was 10 years ago, or are these changes for the better?
Yeah, I think any time, especially when we have growth, expansion, we have people building new homes, new places to live, and start to move further out into rural communities, there can be and has been and will continue to be sort of those stresses between the farming community and new neighbors. And that's something that's not just Franklin County, but I would say in the last couple of decades, it's become more a part of being in the rural community in Franklin County, where someone buys an old farm that doesn't plan to farm, and then all of a sudden there's an active farm next to them, and there can be strife between neighbors. So really trying to work through that has been challenging, and actually we've hosted classes for farmers to go to really learn how to communicate well about what they do so that people understand it, because for a long time up in the hills in Franklin counties, you've been alone and you're in your place and your space, and now there's other people there too that haven't been there before and are maybe coming from a completely different place, and that has caused quite interesting challenges over time. And again, we've done a lot to work with both sides of communities, both agricultural, and non-agricultural, to help them communicate about what they're doing, what their needs are, expectations, I thought it was kind of funny one time, somebody called me up and wanted to know why farmers had to spread manure during the summer. You know, couldn't they just do that in the winter so we don't all have to smell it? And which, you know, like point taken, but we do that actually for the environment. We don't spread in the winter anymore, and we haven't in Vermont for a long time. So it's really, you know, a lot of education.
Jason Gagne, you mentioned earlier that the prices for maple are dictated by our neighbors to the north. And I know they love to brag about, you know, producing the most maple in the world. We're the largest, you know, American producer, but they're the largest North American, what have you. Do maple producers in the state of Vermont ever want or look for more state help to sort of do something about that? I mean, they're never going to produce as much as Quebec, but are they looking for state help in any guidance here? Because when I think of maple producers, I think of them as a very independent sort of lot. You tell me if I'm wrong, but what can the state be doing better to work with them, if anything? What are you looking for from them?
The state could work and has worked with us on a whole host of things. And this past year, they offered a grant, actually, to sugar makers specifically. And there was $550,000 in the pot. And sugar makers applied. And they expected maybe a dozen applicants. They got 315 applicants.
Come on, really?
Yeah, and it was mostly for modernizing maple operations. Larger RO, you know, different evaporator, maybe. The ag department did notice because sugar makers don't usually put in for anything, and the ag department does not get that amount of request ever.
That's really an amazing thing. They expected, what, you said about 15 applications and so many more coming through.
I thought they'd get back to us within a few weeks on the answers, you know, and it took them 4 or 5 months.
Mike McCarthy, I want to ask you this question, Mike McCarthy, because, you know, we were talking about economic development, help you can get from the state. There's 14 counties in Vermont. They all want help. And what I wonder is, how does a legislator like you make the case for help in places like Franklin County, which is, you know, that's what you're concerned with, when the need is really everywhere throughout the state? You know, where does that tension come from?
I think in the time that I've been in the legislature, more and more, we've tried to make sure that anytime there are programs that are designed to help communities, that they're really more formula-based, and that we are trying to make sure that we're spreading out, you know, whether it's the kinds of grants, like we got a grant here to help fix up the sound system and add some amenities to City Hall and improve it, an historic building, for instance, that every time there's a grant like that, you'll see that it's given out to towns throughout the state. We're really trying to make sure that we do economic development and improvement in all 14 counties. And that said, there are places where the geography, the availability of housing, the sort of willingness of people to say, yeah, I'm okay with things being built in my backyard, lends itself to more investment. And so one of the things that I've worked on as the chair of the House Government Operations Committee has been to make sure that municipalities who maybe don't have the technical expertise have the ability to get a little bit of help, whether it's from their regional planning commission or from an independent consultant, to figure out how do they take advantage of, especially the money post-pandemic, like ARPA dollars, to be able to actually go out and get that so that a project that maybe has been long needed, some kind of infrastructure improvement or a new building, that they have the ability to apply for that, because it is hard. I mean, Jason talked about the paperwork for that that ag grant. You wouldn't believe the stuff you have to do to get federal money, right? So it helping through the MTAP program, that municipal technical assistance, that was one way where we were trying to help those towns that sometimes get left out when towns are going to compete, to be able to get some of the help to those communities who aren't always first in line.
At this point, audience members had the chance to ask questions.
The question was about how can we help farmers do better to keep pollutants out of our lakes? We know this is a big problem. We see it a lot in the summertime, algae blooms, things like that. Heather, what do you think farmers can do, and how can we help them to be more environmentally friendly?
Vermont already has probably, I would say, the strictest environmental laws that apply to farmers in the entire country. We also have very strict rules called the required agricultural practices. They used to be recommended. They are required. And they include all kinds of practices that farmers have to put into place to keep soil and nutrients and manure from moving from fields or from a farmstead to a body of water in Vermont, or a ditch even. So there are already a lot of requirements and regulations and inspections. I will say I'm really proud of the accomplishments we've made on farms and everything the farms are doing. But the biggest challenge right now for all of us in the agricultural community is the climate. We had parts of Vermont that received 52 inches of rain in a growing season last year. All of the practices we're putting into place can't stop that. So we're not back to the drawing board. We've done so much, but now we're continuing to look ahead and figure out what's next. And some parts of Vermont are on average receiving 9 more inches of rainfall. And Franklin County is one of those where we're up at 7 inches. So it changes the game.
There was an excellent question here about Vermont's unhoused population of people. Essentially, what about those people who don't have places to live? What's being done in Franklin County to help them? Who would like to tackle that question? Mike McCarthy.
Homelessness is a multifaceted problem, and the legislature and local governments are tackling it and trying to make sure that everyone has the shelter that they need. But it is incredibly challenging in a market where we are racing to build permanently affordable housing so that there are places where people can afford to live. And at the same time, our regulatory framework has made it really challenging to even when a community says, yeah, we want more housing, then we've got to get through a lot of time and expense to get each of those units up. There are a number of ways that in the legislation that we passed, like H-687, we've reduced some of those regulatory hurdles while still preserving some of the ability we have to protect the environment and the way that our landscape looks. But the biggest challenge that we had this year in the short run is about extending the emergency housing that we have. And the folks like me in the House were willing to put more of our state dollars in the short run into making sure that the most vulnerable people who currently don't have housing were able to stay in motels for a little bit longer until we bring more of those affordable housing units online. And I think that the debate that we had with the Senate and with the Scott administration really centered around, yeah, we know that this might hurt people in the short run, but if we spend all those dollars on motels, we're not gonna have money for permanently affordable housing. And what we really said was yes, and thankfully with revenue projections looking rosier than we thought, we were able to do more at the very end of the session than I think we even thought just a few weeks ago. But in the medium and long term, we have to build more units because we just don't live the same way that we used to live. I think Elizabeth talked about this a little bit earlier, but looking at census data as we were going through and redistricting after the last census, the city of St. Albans about 50, 60 years ago had about double the population here. And it's not as if there were double the number of houses, it's that there were more people living in each unit of housing together. Families lived closer together. We all know that our average household sizes have gotten smaller. You know, where there used to be 5 or 6 people in a house, maybe now there's 2 or 3. And so we live differently. And to Elizabeth's earlier point, we've got to build differently, but also encourage that to happen in our village centers, in our downtowns, in the places where we want to encourage growth so that we can keep our farms working, that we can keep the working landscape. And finding that balance is really what bills like H-687, our big Act 250 update, was all about.
Yes, go ahead, Elizabeth.
You know, I've moved a couple of times and trying to find an affordable place is not easy. And looking not necessarily in Franklin County, but around the state, there are a number of permanently affordable projects going up that have units specifically for those people either in homelessness or facing homelessness. So that's encouraging. And I think that we'll see that here sooner rather than later. I think the one thing that is super hard to change is that not in my backyard mentality that some people unfortunately still have. You hear low income, you automatically think, I don't want those people. And not everybody, I don't mean to overgeneralize, but there are people, I don't want those people here. Or you say they're going to be permanently affordable. Well, I don't want those people. It'll drive down property rate, property values. Thank you. So I think that is something, I think people would be shocked what HUD considers to be low income. Because probably a lot of you out there are low income, you just don't know it. And I think that's the other thing we have to realize is that low income level isn't what we perceive it to be, and we need to get over that as a society. So it's just that perception that we really need to work on.
You value community. We need more people to build that community. You have to accept them as well.
Yeah.
That's the message I'm hearing here. Elizabeth Nance, Mike McCarthy, Kelly Vienz, Heather Darby, and Jason Gagne. Thank you so much for answering these questions today, for being with us. I really appreciate it. I think the future of Franklin County seems pretty great to me from where I'm sitting, and I hope you all feel that way as well. And thank you for having us here today. Thank you so much.
That conversation was recorded in late May at a community picnic hosted by Vermont Public. It was at Taylor Park in St. Albans. It's part of an event series brought to you in part by Front Porch Forum, our outreach partner for our 2024 Citizens Agenda project. To learn more about the Citizens Agenda, you can visit vermontpublic.org/election. Special thanks goes to Juliana Vasquez, Brittany Patterson, Eric Ford, Karen Anderson, Kevin Trevelin, Amy Zielinski, Kari Anderson, and Michelle Owens.